That would be the last thing that the U.S. would like to see, in addition to what did to the carnage and the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I think the U.S. has been asking Israel to do two things. One is that Israel has been withholding PA, Palestinian Authority, money, taxes, and revenues right. For the past 5 months. Israel claimed that part of that money goes to the Palestinians in Gaza, right. And even though those Palestinians in Gaza are not members of Hamas, but Israel is trying to punish the Palestinians collectively. And second, there are more than 100,000 Palestinian laborers who are from the West Bank, and since the war erupted, they are no longer working, and that is destabilizing the situation in the West Bank now.
Thank you. We're unfortunately fresh out of time. Thank you, Mukhabir Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University. Daniel Shah, thank you, academic and commentator from New York. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitahway and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahryar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'dhin wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration. Accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. The U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 156th day with the death toll approaching 31,000, most of them women and children. Over two dozen Palestinians die of hunger and malnutrition in Gaza as Israel prevents entry of humanitarian aid and food into the blockaded territory. And Israeli forces use tear gas and water cannon to disperse thousands of protesters demanding the resignation of the regime's prime minister. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. It's over 5 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza, and the regime's attacks keep claiming lives of innocent Gazans. 10 Palestinians were massacred and several others wounded after Israel bombed a house in the Sarek refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip. Separately, two civilians were killed and dozens injured, some critically, when Israeli forces hit the Al-Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. Three Palestinians were killed and others sustained injuries after another attack on a house in the town of Al-Kharara in the south of the Strip. And five others were killed in an Israeli airstrike on Deir al-Bala in central Gaza. Earlier, an Israeli strike hit a 12-floor residential tower in the southern city of Rafah, making dozens of families homeless. The Israeli onslaught has so far killed nearly 31,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children. Thousands of others are also missing and are feared to be dead. Starvation in the besieged Gaza Strip continues to take the lives of Palestinians. To discuss that further, we were joined by our guests earlier in our news review program. Let's see what they had to say.
Now to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Paul Larudi, former U.S. government advisor from Berkeley, and also Mr. Bruce Katz, co-president of Palestinian and Jewish Unity from Montreal. Gentlemen, welcome. Now, Paul, Mr. Larudi, beginning with you, you've seen the stats. Why hasn't anything been done? We've seen many reports by experts that newborn babies, pregnant women, all in all, women and children, who are the most vulnerable and the weak, will die from malnutrition and diseases. This catastrophe was highlighted a long time ago. I mean, there were many warnings in advance by experts saying that this will soon happen. So people will die from starvation. And yet, they let it happen.
The reason it has been playing for a long time as well. Not only have we seen it, but we've known why. And the Israelis have not kept it a secret. The Israeli officials at every level have said that this is their intention, that they intend to destroy them through creating this catastrophe. For them, it's a way to create death of the Palestinian population, to rid themselves of the Palestinian population without having to fire a bullet. All they have to do is to block the food, medicine, etc., from getting there, create a place where no one can survive, and just wait. And they don't want to wait long, but now it's starting to happen, and they might be patient until the entire population is wiped out. We don't know what's going to happen, but that's why it's happening, because it's designed to happen. It's a form of genocide, and that is what they're practicing. And the world has essentially done nothing to stop it, especially the United States, which gives Israel the means to implement the genocide. So yes, it's very simple. They want it, and they have the means to do it, and they're doing it.
That's right. Mr. Cass, talking about aid, there are many supply trucks, hundreds of them, waiting outside the Rafah border to go into Gaza. Not only does the Zionist regime, the military, not give the drivers the okay to enter Gaza, but also lets the Zionist settlers to also block the trucks too. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, as Mr. LaRudy has just stated, it's a calculated policy of genocide. The goal of which is to kill as many Palestinians as possible by way of bombing and a starvation policy, which is exactly what the Nazis did in the Warsaw Ghetto. And Gaza 2024 is the Warsaw Ghetto of this 21st century, and the Netanyahu messianic Judeo-Nazi regime plays the role vis-a-vis the Palestinians that the Nazis played vis-a-vis Jews. And in that respect, President Lula da Silva of Brazil was absolutely right on when he drew the parallel between this regime and the Nazism of the Second World War. It's very clear. Something I would like to add, by the way, I think that everybody noted President Biden's State of the Union address, where he made a reference to the creation of a floating port in Gaza, which would also have floating hospitals to tend to the wounded Palestinians. And it seems to be a great humanitarian gesture. But there is a Jordanian military and strategic affair expert by the name of Hisham Kreitzat, who in an article just yesterday, and I would tell people to, if they can get a hold of that article by Hisham Kreitzat, to read it. But he made a reference to hidden objectives in this whole proposed floating port, two basically. One is to cancel the Rafah border crossing as the means of bringing aid into Gaza. That's what the Israelis are doing, actually. And the second is there would be a connection between Gaza, this floating port, and Cyprus. And what Hisham Kreitzat has said is that the real objective of this so-called disguised humanitarian aid is to force the Palestinians to voluntarily migrate to Europe, thereby evacuating the entire Palestinian population out of Gaza. So in other words, the game that Israel, the United States, and the United Kingdom are playing here is that you have a choice, you Palestinians, die or migrate to Europe. And that's what the floating port is all about. So I would say to all who think that this is a humanitarian gesture on the aid of the United States, aided by the United Kingdom, the two protagonists in dividing Palestine and keeping the Palestinians a subjugated people since 1917, are proposing something that really is a disguised means of evacuating the entire population.
That's right.
of Gaza and forcing them to migrate to Europe.
So, gentlemen, on that note, I would like to thank Mr. Paul Larudi, former U.S. government advisor from Berkeley and also Mr. Bruce Katz, co-president of Palestinian and Jewish Unity from Montreal. Gentlemen, thank you for your time, sir. And with that, we come to the end of this news review section. Thank you for being with us.
Israeli warplanes have launched fresh strike on southern Lebanon, killing 5 civilians and wounding 9 others. All but one of the victims are from the same family. The attack completely destroyed their house and caused heavy damage to dozens of nearby homes. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh earlier joined us from Beirut for more details about the regime's attack.
The entire family has been killed as a result of this Israeli strike. And this is another massacre that you can add to the Israeli crimes. In addition to the previous massacre that we had in Nabatieh and Salwane, we have a man, his wife, and their two sons. And the wife, we learned, was also pregnant. And so that was considered a huge crime that was committed in South Lebanon. We haven't seen so far any retaliation from Hezbollah, although we usually see that there is a direct response. But we saw, for example, what after the massacre of Nabatieh, Hezbollah launched a very a heavy operation against Mirun and other bases that were also new places that were targeted by Hezbollah. And so Hezbollah seems to be basically planning out perhaps how the retaliation is going to be conducted. And you can see from the members of this family, you have the elder son, he's 30 years old, he's a 30-year-old teacher in South Lebanon, but he was considered by Hezbollah a martyr of the movement. And so this basically brings us to the fact that closer and knowledgeable that when it comes to Hezbollah, it's more of a grassroots movement. There's no separation between the people of South Lebanon and Hezbollah. It's not a separate militant group as the U.S. and mainstream media have tried to portray it. Now, this is on one hand. Another hand is the experts are saying that all this pressure by the Israelis trying to focus more on targeting civilians as they are doing in Gaza is an attempt to put pressure on Hezbollah to succumb to the dictates and the conditions that are being put forth by the U.S. and envoys into Lebanon. They have been trying since the beginning of the confrontation, trying to get something from Hezbollah, trying to separate the front, as we said before, making sure that perhaps they can get concessions from Hezbollah using the carrot and the stick.
Thousands of Israeli protesters have once again rallied in Tel Aviv, demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. At least 10 protesters were detained after clashing with the regime's forces, who used tear gas and water cannon to disperse the demonstrators. Protesters called for an immediate ceasefire in Israel's ongoing onslaught on Gaza and the return of the captives being held by Palestinian resistance groups. They criticized Netanyahu's handling of the war on Gaza and demanded new elections. They also called on U.S. President Joe Biden to stop supporting Netanyahu. Thousands of demonstrators have rallied across the world to show support for the Palestinians and to condemn the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protests were held in London, Paris, Rome, and other cities.
More than 5 months of major demonstrations, and they're as energized as ever. Hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters from across the UK marching to the American embassy to deliver a message.
Shame on you, Joe Biden, shame on you.
That message is much for the US president as for the UK government.
The majority of people want a ceasefire now, and it's not even a big ask. What are they asking? Just for humanity and stop killing innocent children and people.
On the stage near the American embassy, Welsh singer Charlotte Church combines Welsh and Arabic words for a song of solidarity, followed by an all-woman cast of speakers marking the International Women's Day and the resilience of Palestinian women. As ever, it's an eclectic mix of groups and organizations, out in great numbers in defiance of attempts by the government to criminalize these overwhelmingly peaceful demonstrations.
We're here to say to the government that we aren't going to be stopped. These aren't hate marches. And we have Jewish blocs, we have Jewish people who march with us in solidarity and who march with us and say not in their name.
The war on Gaza and the UK's support for it has deeply polarized British society. And that's already manifesting itself in the way people are voting. A case in point, the by-elections in Rochdale, Greater Manchester in late February, which handed veteran pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway of the Workers' Party of Britain a landslide victory against the major party candidates.
But we know there's a whole body of people for whom issues of international justice and rights and Britain's position in the world and whether it shows respect for human rights and international law matter. And there are certain constituencies where the issue of does Britain support and protect the rights of the Palestinian people is of particular resonance.
This was the fifth national demonstration of the year, and organizers say there will be more.
While the civilians in Gaza say they feel that their plight is being ignored, the millions of people here and around the world are saying that they are making sure through their protests that the Palestinians know that their cries are being heard. Saipur is up, London.
If there was any concern that pro-Palestinians in France were starting to lose interest in the five-month-long attempted genocide of Gaza by Israel, one of the nation's largest demonstrations since the start of the invasion put that idea to rest. Many thousands converged in the capital for a passionate denunciation of President Emmanuel Macron, the leaders of the Pan-European Project, and all of Israel's war supporters across the West.
If France must stay in Europe, then Europe must respect our demands, and we demand that they stop protecting the terrorist state of Israel. Hamas is not a terrorist group. They are a resistance group, and the United Nations refuse to label them terrorists. Palestinians have the right to resist, to exist, and to be free.
In what many say is an illustration of the West's deadly hypocrisy, at least five children were killed by airdropped food aid from Western nations and their allies.
This week, more than 200 members of European Union Parliament called for an arms embargo on Israel. They said that by remaining silent on Gaza, Europe has no credibility to speak on Russia's actions in Ukraine. Germany now provides 28% of Israel's military imports.
Israeli settler attacks in the West Bank have almost tripled since October to 9 per day. Israeli troops continue to open fire on starving Palestinians seeking food aid and also on United Nations troops in Lebanon. Some 31,000 Gazans have been killed and over 72,000 Gazans wounded, all leaving marchers in disbelief that the West continues to support Israel without conditions or consequences.
It's scandalous. France is charged with defending international law, and it even has a United Nations Council veto to do so, but it only defends Israel instead. I am not asking France to bomb Tel Aviv. I am asking them to uphold humanity's laws with very simple sanctions that could be put in place on Tel Aviv immediately.
Even with the holy month of Ramadan starting next week, Israel has rejected yet another plan for a ceasefire. Many say it's a new low for Tel Aviv.
One must respect the humanity of others, and normally during Ramadan there's a ceasefire to allow people to live their religion in peace. And yet Israel wants to keep murdering babies by starvation during Ramadan. It's scandalous and unacceptable. There must be a ceasefire.
Paris claimed that their forces have destroyed four Yemeni drones in the Gulf of Aden that were heading towards a European Union naval operation, as Israel's invasion edges closer to a larger regional conflict. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Oh,
Pro-Palestinian activists in South Korea have expressed their anger with Israel as they rallied and marched from the Seoul Central Mosque. South Koreans joined people from various countries around the world to condemn Israel, following the massacre of more than 100 Palestinians sought to collect food assistance in Gaza.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans, and I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
in the limelight.
According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, at least 7 Palestinian civilians in Gaza were killed looking for signals in late January and early February, often in areas where the Zionist regime military has taken full control on the ground, like northern Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, on the morning of February 10th, Mohammed Obeid, 26, left the home of relatives in Nuseirat refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip, where he has been sheltering to try to get a signal on his phone. It didn't go well. The signal in the camp was weak, and he, along with a couple of other young men also in search of a signal, had wandered toward Salahuddin Road, which runs almost the whole length of Gaza, north to south. They were still hundreds of meters away from the street when Obeid saw an Israeli regime drone heading straight for the group. Obeid said, I wanted to get an internet signal because I was using an eSIM and needed to check on my sister and her sons still in the north. But then the drone started approaching. The men turned and ran, but too late. The drone, a quadcopter equipped with a rifle, opened fire and Obeid was shot in the back. Another man was also injured and both were rushed to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the city of Deir al-Balah. They are not the only casualties of a desperate search of connectivity. High ground is often sought by people looking for a signal. It's a risky affair. Higher ground, hills, the tops of buildings, open areas are closely monitored by the Zionist regime drones and regularly targeted. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, at least 7 civilians were killed looking for signals in late January and early February, often in areas where the Zionist regime's military has taken full control on the ground, like northern Gaza. The human rights group said Israel particularly targets civilians trying to pick up communications and internet signals in besieged areas where serious human rights violations are occurring in an attempt, the group continued, to prevent press coverage of and make it difficult for residents to report such violations. Ismail Al-Masri, 30, had tried to pick up a signal in Tel al-Za'atar area of northern Gaza. He wanted, according to his brother Muhammad, 28, to send out a video containing a plea about starvation in northern Gaza from a group of young people who were, like him, sheltering at the school. Run by the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, the school is located in Jabalia Camp, northern Gaza. Before he managed it, however, he was shot and killed by what Muhammad said was an Israeli regime sniper. He said, my brother was killed with a single shot to the back of the head. We don't know where the sniper was, but at the same time, on the same day, on February 8, 3 others were shot and injured. Since October 7th, the fabricated regime of Israel has completely cut off telecommunications and the internet from the Gaza Strip at least 10 times, according to the Euromed group, often just before an escalation. The Zionist regime military has almost completely destroyed Gaza's telecommunications infrastructure. Cards, known as eSIMs, have become a vital way for Palestinians in Gaza to try to maintain communication with their relatives and friends, as well as a primary means by which to communicate with the wider world. Being all electronic, eSIMs have the added advantage that they can be bought from abroad for people in Gaza to use. Ahmad Sharaf, 30, a resident of downtown Gaza City, was killed on December 10th when he was trying to pick up a signal from the top of their building. According to his brother, Zaid Sharaf, 25, who has since been forced to evacuate to Rafah, he and Ahmad had been trying to contact a third brother, Majed, who lives in Belgium, to tell they were fine. Zaid said, "My brother was standing on the roof to pick up a signal. We hadn't gone up there for days, but we need to give some sign of life to Majed. I stayed only a little, but when I went down the stairs, I heard a drone and the ground of a missile. The roof, I found Ahmad there, who had been killed." The Sharaf family had already lost 10 relatives earlier in December when the Zionist regime attacked an apartment in the building where they live, Zaid said. "I will never forget how the Israeli occupation bombed our neighbors' homes and killed our brothers and relatives. I cannot forget those terrifying days. My brother did not pose any danger to Israel. He just wanted to call my older brother."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
America Latina y el mundo observa.
Latin America and the world observe in disbelief what is happening in Argentina. How is it possible for the people of a nation with so many democratic traditions of struggle, of workers' rights, of national construction, of the quest for national independence, to choose a character who is the complete opposite?
Y que es todo lo contrario. Quien se reclama anarcoliberal, anarcocapitalista,
who claims to be a narco-liberal, a narco-capitalist, a Zionist, a son of the United States, who has said that he is going to end all state companies. Even now, at this moment, he has stopped delivering new contracts to existing state companies.
Nuevos contratos a las empresas estatales existentes.
They are finished. The same in health, in education in Argentina. The free education for a long time. Today, nothing. That has finished. How is it possible that this happens in a country that had those traditions? How did it come to that? Who paved the road? Yes, they will have to respond for what they were before. The people who applied policies that left the majority dissatisfied, the policies such as those that the International Monetary Fund imposed upon even the government of Alberto Fernandez that comes from Peronism. A Peronism that has a catch-all policy, diverse policies, but always looking at what the Monetary Fund decides. But even so, what is happening now is practically inexplicable.
De cualquier manera, está claro.
Either way, it is clear that Milei is a pawn of American imperialism and Zionism. He declares himself a Zionist. When he takes office, he invites his Zionist friend and puppet of the United States, Zelensky, who is leading his country to bleed, to death, and to obey the interests of NATO and imperialism. Well, what can we expect when he comes today? When he proposes a series of measures that have led to thousands of workers, students, residents, indigenous people, taking to the streets to protest, to demand their right. Quite a few people who voted for Milei, for Javier Milei, are already on the streets. Javier Milei has spoken about lineage, and he governs with lineage, with the Menem lineage, with Macri's lineage, that is, with the extreme right. That's what we have ahead of us. And how is he going to do it? He has a minority in parliament. He has a minority in the provincial governments and in the mayors. How is he going to govern by decree with a subterfuge looking for ways to fix the law and a kind of dictatorship like Fujimori's in the end? These are questions that time and the Argentinian reality will answer. But we are all looking forward, more so to the neighboring countries such as Chile, Bolivia, etc. Brazil, for sure, and Uruguay. What is going to happen with the emigration of Argentines who are going to look for new places, new expectations of life, where in addition the conditions are also bad?
Están malas. ¿Qué ha pasado? ¿Qué queda?
What happened? What's left? Argentina becomes a colony of the United States, who is going to give away its natural resources to North American companies, such as lithium, right? They have recently approved a special law in this regard that protects the interests of the Americans, the property of Americans.
La propiedad del norteamericano, sin lugar a duda.
Without a doubt, at the same time, it has come into contradiction with its main contributor in foreign currency, more than 43% of it, that is, with the People's Republic of China. China has told up to this point. Up to here, sir, there is no more currency. Where are you going to get money from? From sales of state companies? And then what remains? Nothing? How are you going to carry out his management by increasing repression, as he has done? Do not forget that he has demanded the payments of $75,000 to the popular organizations that have raised the current protests in Argentina. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Eduardo Artes.
Hoy día vamos a trabajar en profundidad sobre las causas.
Today we want to deeply discuss the causes and consequences of Javier Milei's election. How was he chosen? What was the background? And what are the results of the views and interests of the workers?
Salidas que hay desde un punto de vista popular, de los intereses de los trabajadores, porque estamos con un dirigente.
Today we are with a high-ranking syndicate leader. Welcome back to Black and White, Jorge Ramirez, university lecturer and leader of the Argentine Union at the national level.
Bienvenido, Jorge Ramirez, a Negro y Blanco por Hispan TV.
Thank you very much.
Jorge, un poco la pregunta que quiero plantear.
Jorge, I mentioned a part of the question. What records are there, and how did the Argentine nation get to the point where it chose Milei? Despite all the issues he has with him, I mean in terms of social, economic, national sovereignty, and other areas, who is he?
Por favor, adelante.
Bueno, indudablemente, el deterioro en las condiciones de la vida.
Yes, without a doubt, the decline in the living conditions of a very wide segment of the Argentine society was one of the causes of this situation. And the current situation in Argentina is because an extremist president has come to power there, whose statements, even before the elections, have really been deplorable for the majority of the society. But definitely, a high percentage of the society has expressed dissatisfaction with the traditional politics of Argentina, with Peronism and the previous government at that time, despite the promises and discourse of the so-called defense of the sovereignty and interests of the people. What happened was a gradual decline in the living conditions of the vast majority of people, which exacerbated in recent months. This issue is clearly related to the agreement that was made between the previous government and the International Monetary Fund, as well as the adoption of policies that we have repeatedly seen in different countries of the world, and specifically in Argentina, which include the reaction of government investments. And this action causes a large part of the economy to shrink. In fact, the health sector and education sector were damaged. Argentina has always been proud of these two sectors, public health and public education. Despite the fact that a candidate suddenly comes along and pursues the elimination of government systems and seeks complete privatization of education and health sectors, the majority of people, at least the part that participated in the election, chose this candidate. But today, they're clearly tired of the past experiences. They are tired of pushing themselves towards the great powers, or in some cases dealing with centralized or imperialist interests, but never severing their fundamental connection with capitalism and still having their country depend on it. They are tired of the fact that only one or few specific strata in the society benefit, and at the same time, they try to have a level of freedom through which they can direct the political performance of the governments in the direction of their desire. But this issue showed its ineffectiveness over time, because in practice, for the majority of the society, this meant a continuous lowering of the standard of living conditions. After all, there were many things that made Argentines proud, such as workers' rights, the workers' social security system, which is undoubtedly an indicator of superiority compared to other countries, and also compensation regulations, the defense of workers' interests in lawsuits, and the consideration of workers in legislation. Regarding these indicators, Argentina was far ahead compared to other countries. But today, none of these things are important anymore, because the number of people who have official works and their jobs are registered is decreasing. Their jobs are completely low and informal, and for this reason, these so-called useless benefits, which include part of the working class, do not benefit the rest. There is no pension, compensation, or social security for them. These benefits do not include a part of the society whose number is growing. Therefore, in such a situation, the possibility of responding to political parties which have been in power in the past years has decreased. And the common discourse in extreme right-wing parties around the world has spread here as well. And they say that politics was the cause of this issue, and they blame politics. They deny movements that bring progress and say that public health and government jobs are harmful. They say government costs are the biggest problem. This discourse has penetrated a large part of the society, and now it has led to the election of President Milei. This discourse still has a level of acceptability, although its specific effects were very severe from the beginning. In the past, we have talked about these issues and the shock doctrine, deep and radical changes against the vast majority of the society, the loss of workers' rights, the destruction of the scientific system, the destruction of the government health structure through the elimination of funding. Similar efforts have been made for this purpose in our country and other Latin American countries. What these efforts have in common, however, is that they have been swift and violent and have publicly threatened to suppress any popular protests and dissent.
De represión a cualquier protesta de parte de la
Ahí
población.
Detengámonos un poquito.
Let's pause here. Regarding this threat of repression, yes, well, there was a background. Someone paved the way for us to get here, and you explained it very well. We'll take a short break and be right back with Jorge Ramirez, union leader and public university lecturer in Argentina.
Estamos acá, ¿no es cierto?, con Jorge Ramírez y continuamos en Negro y Blanco. Jorge, inmediatamente instalada o instalado el gobierno.
Here we are with Jorge Ramírez, and we continue Black and White. Jorge, immediately after the start of the Milei government, we saw demonstrations which were covered very well by the Chilean press, and it was definitely talked about in all Spanish-speaking countries and all countries of the world. What are these demonstrations? What sections of society do they represent? And finally, what is the content of the demonstrations? And do you refer to this as a spontaneous movement?
Yes, a number of people from every political spectrum were present in this demonstration. On the other hand, there are calls from the leftist groups, various leftist groups that call at the same time as the anniversary of that memorable event in the history of Argentina, December 20, 2001. On this date, huge crowds of Argentines across the country took to the streets and defied the martial law and overthrew a neoliberal government led by Fernando de la Rúa. During this anniversary, a call was announced which coincided with the 10th day of the start of the Milei government. This demonstration was generally organized by human rights organizations, various groups in the left wing, and some social organizations. Participation by groups close to the previous government was low, preferring to use social media for criticism to avoid the repercussions, as the government had announced early on that it would use force to crack down and warned that it would not allow the streets to be closed. And considering these conditions, they tried to hold demonstrations on the sidewalks because passers-by are not important to the government and cars are the problem. Therefore, thousands of people tried to demonstrate on the sidewalks, but this did not happen. People demonstrated, but with caution to avoid falling into the trap of incitement. But the media, most of the media, expressed their concern about the possibility of violence and closing the streets and said that this is the main problem. It's as if people don't want food, education, or health, and they try to block the street. This level of contradiction is the dominant discourse of most media in our country, media that has a lot of influence. Yes.
Entonces, eso fue. Sí.
Alberto Fernández, en un Twitter, dice que es la República la que está en peligro.
Alberto Fernández, former president of Argentina, announced on Twitter, formerly known as X, that the Republic is in danger. It is strange because he himself caused this to happen. As you yourself say, we're facing a repression that can be very strong. For us in Chile, this issue has attracted our attention because this policy was implemented during the Pinochet dictatorship in Chile. They did the same thing, privatization, removal of labor laws, destruction of national industry, and many other things. These are exactly the actions that Milei had proposed. And finally, this will lead to public disgust. How can one confront these measures by aligning popular movements?
De repudio, no de contradicción con los sectores populares. ¿Cómo es posible enfrentarlo esto
dotando al movimiento popular de una dirección.
Alignment in the social and political context, for example, the important parts of Peronism that can play a role. They have to correct some things. And finally, the Communist Party and the Liberty Party of Argentina.
Que tendrá que rectificar algunas cosas, ¿no? ¿Qué pasa con el Partido Comunista, con el Partido de la Liberación de Argentina? En fin.
No, claramente este escenario...
Clearly, the protests will have a different form in terms of political guidance. It is clear that in the previous government, there are sections that claim to be leftist and participate in the government of Albert Fernandez. And today, they're in the same political environment that is currently called Union for the Fatherland. But what one sees is how some sectors are disintegrating and reorganizing in the face of this onslaught from Milei. As you rightly point out, previously, programs of this depth were only implemented by dictatorial regimes. In many ways, it's very similar to what Carlos Menem did here. But in this case, the immediate effects of the actions are too difficult for the majority of people. In this situation, one can see that a trend will definitely change the makeup of the political scene. So, similar to what we saw in 2001, and we saw the formation of a political management for the demonstrations, I mean, the demonstrations that were very large and inclusive, and there was a lot of participation in them, we also saw a similar situation in Chile a few years ago. Demonstrations that are very crowded, extensive, demanding, and have a clear program. But it was able to lead a political process of autonomy, independence, social freedom in the society in which the majority has the authority of its own destiny. This will definitely happen. Until today, apart from the words that are being said, we have not seen larger-scale demonstrations by the Communist Party. In the field of Peronists and groups that are closer to popular demands and have planned demands regarding national independence and the working class as a fundamental part, we have not seen them play a significant role until this moment. Of course, they are changing the situation and defining new positions in facing the new arena. Also, it does not seem practical that some small and new organizations can enter the field of struggle against this extreme brutality in Argentina. The proposed programs are very reactionary and related to the 19th and early 20th centuries.
Y eso, sí.
Te pregunto lo siguiente. Mira, las medidas que está tomando Milei son tan antinacionales.
Yes, I will ask you the next question. Milei's actions are so anti-national, they are so in the interests of imperialism. Even regarding lithium, he recently announced that he will definitely hand over lithium to the Americans.
A la propiedad sin ningún tipo de ¿cómo se llama? De traba ninguna, ¿no? Ni beneficio casi para Argentina.
Entonces, he even wants a special law to protect Americans and their property. And this law has almost no benefit for Argentina. Therefore, it is true that the policy of Milei hurts the poor, workers, and ethnic groups, but they also harm the small and medium bourgeoisie, and even the big bourgeoisie and part of the company owners. With all due respect, what it looks like from here is the creation of a great anti-imperialist front, because what is happening in Argentina is not unrelated to what is happening in the world around the conflict between American imperialism and us. They want us to surrender and not let a new relationship between countries be established.
Y llevarnos a impedir, ¿no?, que simplemente se cree una nueva relación entre los países.
Eso es muy claro.
This is very clear. The country's submission to U.S. policy is quite clear. This is very obvious with the example you provided. We're witnessing the dismantling of the law of restricting the right to purchase land by foreigners who are allowed to buy water areas, rivers, and various resources of the country. They call this freedom. This is the literature of the extreme right all over the world. But clearly, here, beyond what seems like rhetoric,
These actions mean the imposition of the great ambitions of imperialism, subduing the economy based on their own needs and eliminating any kind of national production, although the bourgeoisie in Argentina in recent times have not been distinctly nationalist, and their sections that have interests. Domestic markets give them life, as well as some others who try to maintain some degree of self-sufficiency in production, and see that they're now practically eliminated. Therefore, there is no question about creating a front that can stand in the face of these issues and the type of personality that makes this possible in the anti-imperialist personality.
We have 1 minute left, and in this short time, we would like to hear your words, please, and we would like them to be focused on the academic world, which we in Chile and many Latin American countries have a lot of respect for, because it is free and very inclusive. Please let me know what you think about this. How does this section get damaged?
Yes, without a doubt. So far, what is clear is that the budget is going to be cut, and the resources will only be there until March or April, both in the practical system and in public universities. This means the disarmament of Argentina in a very necessary case, which is the discussion of identity construction and education of scientists, researchers, and artists in public universities. This is marginalizing people who play an irreplaceable role in building the country. They want to bring them under the law of the market, in which the strongest is American imperialism.
Yes, that's right. We are looking forward to hearing new things in the news, and I believe that will surely happen because the Argentine nation has a history of very hard and breathtaking struggles. And we wish for complete success in defending national sovereignty in the form of an anti-imperialist personality against this pro-American and pro-Zionist government. Jorge Ramirez, thank you very much. This is Black and White.
Thank you very much for the invitation that gave me the opportunity to describe what is happening in Argentina. The oppressed nations of the world should start a joint struggle from every region. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In the limelight. Donald Trump has secured a nearly $92 million bond to support the New York writer E. Jean Carroll's defamation verdict against him while he appeals the civil case. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump has secured a $91,630,000 bond for the judgment in his defamation case brought by the writer E. Jean Carroll. The former president obtained an appeals bond from the Virginia-based federal insurance company totaling $91,630,000 to cover the $83 million judgment in the case plus interest, according to a court filing on Friday morning, 8th of March. Donald Trump on Friday, 8th of March, also filed a notice of appeal of the judgment to the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Either paying the judgment or posting a bond for the judgment's full amount was required for him to move ahead with the appeal. President Trump respectfully requests that this court recognize the supersedious bond obtained by President Trump in the sum of $91,630,000 and approve it as adequate and sufficient to stay the enforcement of the judgment. To the extent that the judgment awards damages, pending the ultimate disposition of President Trump's appeal, Trump's attorney Alina Haber said on in Friday's court filing. In a statement to ABC News, Ali Nahaba said they are confident that their appeal will result in the judgment being overturned. Due to the numerous prejudicial errors made at the lower level, we are highly confident that the Second Circuit will overturn this egregious judgment, Ali Nahaba said. The conditions of the bond did not specify what assets Donald Trump used to secure the bond. By posting a bond, Trump guaranteed that E. Jean Carroll can collect the judgment if the former president exhausts his appeal, former federal prosecutor Josh Naftalis told ABC News. The appeal process could take more than a year, Naftalis said. Trump is still appealing the $5 million judgment a jury awarded to Carroll last May after determining the former president had sexually abused her. The former president in January was ordered to pay $83.3 million in damages to E. Jean Carroll, a former Elle magazine columnist, for defaming her in 2019 when he denied her allegation that he had sexually abused her. Trump, who said Carroll was totally lying and that she was not my type, has denied all wrongdoing. On Thursday, 7th of March, the judge overseeing the case denied Trump's request for a temporary delay of the penalties. Mr. Trump's current situation is a result of his own dilatory actions, Judge Lewis Kaplan wrote in his order on Thursday, 7th of March. He has had since 26th of January to organize his finances with the knowledge that he might need to bond this judgment, yet he waited until 25 days after the jury verdict to file his prior motion for an unsecured or partially secured stay pending resolution of post-trial motions. Judge Lewis Kaplan said that Trump failed to show how the judgment constitutes an irreparable injury or demonstrate the expenses he faces by posting a bond in the case. The expense of ongoing litigation in the absence of a stay does not constitute irreparable injury in the relevant sense of the term, Judge Kaplan wrote. The judge on Friday, 8th of March, took note of Trump's bond but declined to immediately